Hello, on this week's program we celebrate what would have been legendary Canadian pianist Glenn Gould's 75th birthday. A CD of a recording of a computer-generated re-performance of his monumental 1955 recording of Bach's Goldberg Variations is currently on release. Pianist Simona Dinnerstein, whose own version of the Goldberg Variations is near the top of the classical music charts, tells us if the technology has been able to replicate the man. And we welcome Philadelphia Inquirer classical music journalist David Patrick Stearns to our team. He takes a look at Amadeus, the latest production at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia. That's all I have this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
There are currently two CDs featuring Bach's Goldberg Variations in the classical music charts. The latest Glenn Gould CD is a new recording of his great 1955 performance of the Goldberg Variations. The original mono disc has been recreated in stereo by a company called Zempf, which takes audio recordings and turns them back into live performances, claiming to precisely replicate what was originally recorded. The software-based process extracts every musical nuance of a recorded performance and stores the data in a high-resolution digital file. Then, using a Disclavier, a sophisticated computer-based player piano, plays back and records the computer's performance. The other recording of the Goldberg Variations is by Simona Dinnerstein, and it is, ironically, the more successful of the two. We invited Simona Dinnerstein to listen to both the original 1955 Gould recording and this new Zempf computer performance and tell us what she thought. She came into our studios on Thursday, one day after what would have been Gould's 75th birthday. I first asked her what struck her initially as the difference between the two versions.
First, of course, the quality of the recording. The recording quality is completely different. It's very, very clear, and it has a kind of a little bit of reverberance in it, which is not present in the 1955 recording. And I personally like hiss, and I like all of those, the sound of an old recording,
right.
And I like his grunting and groaning. I love hearing him making his noises. I mean, there are no noises, obviously, in this new one. But it was interesting also because the piano sounded wrong to me, the instrument.
Which it was.
Yes, and that
we should explain, the original one was on, we believe, on a Steinway, and this was a Yamaha Disclavier.
Yeah. So. Yes, and it was a little odd hearing his playing on a different instrument. It threw me off somewhat. And then the instrument to me, now, I didn't know what it was I was listening to, but it sounded artificial to me, especially the bass. I don't know why, but I was trying to think, why did it sound artificial?
But just as you just said, listening to him play in reference to this. So subconsciously somewhere you've decided that this is Glenn Gould, or have you? Is this a machine playing this?
This is a virtual Glenn Gould, isn't it?
Well, supposedly.
You know, it sounded, there was something very bizarre about it because it was Gould in a way, but it was also almost a caricature of Gould, I felt. Like, especially listening to some of the passages where he has like running notes in the bass line, it sounded very sort of digital to me. And people always talk about, this is the interesting thing, so many people talk to me about how Glenn Gould's playing is digital. And I don't think his playing is digital at all. I think that he was...
You mean mechanical?
Mechanical and very even and kind of clipped. But I think that his playing is actually very, very shaped. And he was an incredibly sensitive pianist. I mean, sensitive to touch. And I don't think of his playing being digital. I think if you really listen to his recordings, it's not all about being even and being a series of notes that are played with perfect equality. It's not like that at all. But on this recording, that's what it sounded like, and that was a little strange. I couldn't figure that out because supposedly it's recreating exactly what his touch was, which makes me wonder whether the sound of the instrument itself was making it sound too. I don't know. The quality didn't have his sound. It sounds somewhat like a synthesizer or something like that. I don't know.
Let's listen. Is there a particular section that illustrates that? And we'll play one from the original 1955 recording and one from this re-performance.
Yeah, I would say Variation 3, if you listen to the bass line, it's kind of strange.
Excerpts from both the original 1955 Glenn Gould recording of the Goldberg Variations and a new Zempf computer re-performance. Let's now return to our interview with Simona Dinnerstein. Her recording of Bach's Goldberg Variations is currently riding high on the classical music charts. We last met her on Creatively Speaking in March, and I asked her how things had changed with her newfound success.
I think that there are a lot of different things going on right now. I think part of it is because of the intensity of the past few weeks since the recording was released. I've been interviewed an awful lot about how I play the piece, and I feel a bit self-conscious about it now. And that's kind of, I spent a long time trying to get away from thinking about what anybody else thought of my playing. I mean, I stopped studying it's like 10 years ago now because I felt I was being too influenced by, I was too influenced by what I wanted somebody to think about my playing, a teacher or another person. And I felt that I was not going to really become a full musician if I kept on thinking that way. And I needed to really just listen to myself and form my own opinions. And somehow, suddenly, I'm kind of being inundated with everybody else's opinions about how I play this piece, which people seem to feel is somewhat controversial. And I didn't think of it that way at all. I didn't set out to play it to make a controversial statement. I just was trying to play it in a way that felt true to the music for me at that time. And so it's been a little strange also because I didn't listen to the recording in a while, and then I listened to it again, and I realized that I'm playing it differently now, and then that got me to thinking about, you know, I've just been thinking a lot about my own playing, which is probably not a good thing to do. You know, I think it's really, I can't complain about what's going on right now. It's very exciting, and I'm really thrilled, and it's wonderful. But I could see how people become kind of closed off
as Glenn Gould did for the last 20 years of his life.
Yeah, and I've been thinking a lot about what he said about why he became an exclusively recording artist. He felt that his playing changed through playing concerts, and that he was playing to the public. And I notice when I'm performing the piece that I have to be very careful about that, that I don't do that. And I didn't ever really notice that so much with other programs, but there's something about this piece of music. Perhaps it's because you're also sustaining your focus for such a long period of time. But it has a lot of challenges, and I think that also keeping your focus and keeping it, making it special and hearing how special the music is. It's very important to hear the music as if for the first time when you play it. And if you're playing it like a few times a week, performing it, then you have to somehow rid your mind of what happened in the last concert, and it's all new, all over again. And that's very hard, especially if you're playing on instruments that are not ideal, or you know, you're feeling a little uncomfortable because you've been traveling and, you know, you wish you were home, or I don't know, or there's somebody in the audience that, you know, you wish wasn't there. But it's a journey. I'm I'm going to be curious to know how I feel at the end of the season, having performed it many, many times.
Final question. Why did you record such a controversial version of the Goldberg? Simona, as usual, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Great talking with you. Thanks.
An excerpt from the third Goldberg variation. That's Simona Dinnerstein's latest recording of J.S. Bach's great work. It's available now on the Telarc label. You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI. Many people who went to the movies during the 1980s have an image of Mozart that simply won't go away, of a hoppity, skippity, bucktooth braying imp. The source material for this Hollywood version of the great composer is now on One Philadelphia stage, as Philadelphia Inquirer classical music journalist David Patrick Stearns now reports.
He's back. Not Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who wrote many of the world's great symphonies and operas. That one never goes away. But here comes Wolfi, the fictionalized and somewhat annoying version of the composer created by Peter Schaffer in the hit play and Oscar-winning film Amadeus.
Oh, how do you like it?
They're all so beautiful. Why don't I have three heads?
Oh, this is funny.
That was 1984. The Wilma Theater's new production, which plays through October 27th, arrives in a rather different Mozartian climate. Musicologists have based entire careers on deromanticizing and even de-dramatizing the view of destitute, semi-delirious Mozart portrayed in the final scenes of the Schaffer play and film. But did that ever really matter? The play's main character is Mozart's rival composer Antonio Salieri. The lesser of the two composers, by far, Salieri was once rumored to have poisoned Mozart, or at least kept him from getting much-needed work in 18th century Vienna. Yes, the play is about jealousy, but also things more cosmic. Though Salieri prayed to be God's voice on earth, all of his 45 or so operas, so popular in his own time, died at the gates of immortality.
The main conflict is not between Salieri and Mozart. It's between Salieri and God, and Mozart is the battlefield.
Wilma Theater's co-artistic director Yuri Ziska is a native of the Czech Republic, where Mozart himself had some of his greatest successes. Every summer when returning to Prague, Ziska visits the famous Estate Theater, where Mozart's opera Don Giovanni was premiered. Never having seen the play live, Ziska hatched his own vision. It now takes place entirely in the fantastical realms of Salieri's mind in the final days of his life. For that, he employed set designer Robert Pezoha, known for last season's Wilma Theater production of The Pillow Man. The result is a radical transformation of the Wilma performing space. Cobwebbed chandeliers hang every which way. White curtains are draped everywhere, like shrouds. Pezoha calls it the attic of Salieri's mind.
We have approximately 30 chandeliers suspended over the audience, and the cobwebs which are draped are just essentially a spun polyester, which you would find in a common pillow. We have chains and ropes suspended over the audience. And then on the stage deck itself is a black plexiglass, which provides a mirror for Salieri's mind, which is cut into the shape of a cello or a violin. In the background, we have a wig, and so a lot of the larger scenes, we have up to 18 people coming through that wig portal. And so these essentially are people in Salieri's mind entering through his head.
This is not to suggest that the Wilma Theater's current production of Amadeus will play like some well-dressed sequel to Nightmare on Elm Street. Everybody involved with the Wilma production resists characterizing the jealous Salieri as evil, though he obsessively craved the talent that God gave the less moral, less upstanding Mozart. All of this comes together in the play's increasingly infamous 16th scene. It's the final confrontation between two egotistical giants. Mozart is at home, only days away from death, tormented by his unfinished requiem. Salieri appears for a visit, seemingly as a friend, but not leaving that way. The scene was only added in the past few years by playwright Peter Schaffer. Its Wilma Theater performance might be the first in North America, and it arrives just when Dean Nolan, who plays Salieri, could use a rest in this incredibly exhausting play rather than the most dense and difficult scene of all.
Scene 16 is... there's a confluence of all kinds of emotions and need and fear, realization, incredible remorse, reversals. I think it's a scene of reversals. I go in with one thought, and then in the middle of the scene, I am so stricken with the reality of what I've done that it overwhelms me to the point that I have to make a change and confess. I have to come clean. It is one of those kinds of brilliantly exhausting moments on stage. But yeah, it's a doozy. Let's say that.
Amadeus isn't the only dramatization of the Salieri killed Mozart theory. Rimsky-Korsakov composed a like-minded opera titled Mozart and Salieri. However, scholars suspect no foul play. But when a composer as great as Mozart dies unexpectedly at age 35, you wonder. As with the assassination of a great politician, we know a lot about Mozart's death, but not what to believe. Even when you know that the play is invented, the friction between the truth or the gaps within it only increases.
Nobody agrees on anything when it comes to Mozart. They don't agree about his gambling. They don't agree about how he was buried. And strangely enough, that for Peter Schaffer, that was the initial inspiration when he read about his funeral. And some say that the weather was so awful that nobody could show up. Others say that it was a nice sunny day and the secret police was involved. We know that his wife, Constanze, did not attend the funeral. And it's so clouded in mystery that what Peter Schaffer wrote is just one of the possibilities. There could be many others.
One thing would seem to be certain. Antonio Salieri had lots to be jealous about. Amid the popularity of Amadeus, some of Salieri's operas have been revived. I sat through Zurich Opera's carefully produced Azzurri Dormus a few years ago. Now, as I listen to this overture from Salieri's Falstaff, I think, too few notes, Antonio. Way too few.
Philadelphia Inquirer classical music journalist David Patrick Stearns. Amadeus is at the Wilma Theatre through October 27th.
Thank you.
And that's it for now. Our thanks this week to Carrie Gorn and Christina Jensen. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly. Our executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.